following message was recorded live from Crossroads Church, a grace-centered community in Central Alberta, Canada.
Take this through to about the middle of June, but I want to tell you, you don't want to miss 2 weeks from today. Pastor Jordan Cavanaugh will be speaking on this subject. And what we're doing is we're looking at couples in the Bible, just real couples in the Bible, and just seeing if we can learn anything from their relationship, from their marriage. And he's going to take a couple from the New Testament. Their names were Priscilla and Aquila. And he's already told me where he's going with this thing, and it's absolutely outstanding. So just a heads up that there's, if you can endure today and next week, there's some good stuff coming down the track. It's going to be really good. Her name is Maria D'Urso. I don't know if you've ever heard of Maria D'Urso. As a young person, probably 13, 14, 15, she got addicted to all sorts of stuff, began to live the life, became an addict. And then she bumped into a man named Michael, who was a little bit older than her, and Michael introduced her to the world of trafficking. And they trafficked together, and they made a lot of money, so much money, that for them, life became very, very good. They had cars. They had stuff. They had the best clothes. They had diamonds. She said, I had lots of diamonds. And all this probably before the age of 25 years of age. Just everything. She said, you know, growing up in New York, we'd never been anywhere, so we decided with all our money and stuff, we would take a trip to Mexico, and they went to Mexico. And down in Mexico, it went well for the first 2 days. And then she said, I began to feel so empty. She said, I had everything. She had a really good-looking guy. We had great sex. We had all sorts of stuff. I'd brought diamonds with me. I was in Mexico. We were in a 5-star resort in the best suite. And yet, she said, there was a cavity in me that, she said, it went like this, from here down to here. She's a huge, yawning cavity, totally empty. She said, I wish I could have taken my diamonds and just stuffed them in there to fill up that cavity, but I couldn't do it. She said, one day Michael went to the beach and I stayed in the room, and she said, I didn't even know if there was a God, but I just raged at him. God, if you're there, why am I like this? And all that kind of stuff. And she said, in the middle of her rage, she heard a voice. And the voice said, Maria. Maria. She said, I'd never had anybody call me Maria like that. She said, a warm feeling went from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. She said, I knew there was a God. I didn't know who he was, but I never wanted to lose whatever it was that came to me when he said, Maria. She packed up and said, Michael, we're going back, and they caught a flight back to New York, and she didn't even know what a church was, but she'd heard one of her friends say she went to church. So we found a church. She said, we went in, and a guy preached, and she said, before he's half done, I was kneeling at the front, and I gave my life to Jesus, and when I looked up, Michael was beside me, and he gave his life to Jesus too. Michael and Maria, they're old now. They're like Pastor Ken's age, and they pastor City Tabernacle Church in New York. They have 3 sons that are pastors. It's a wonderful place in Brooklyn where people come and meet Jesus week after week after week and get off drugs. Everything changes when God calls your name. Everything. When God calls your name, everything changes. I want to talk to you today about another woman in the Bible. And she had her name called, and it changed everything for her too. It's a love story, actually. You know, we live in a world that's awash in love stories, don't we? But most of them are lies. They're not love stories at all. They're lust stories. They're sex fantasy stories. They're it's about me stories, but they're not really love stories. And I realized this week, thinking about this, that from the cradle to the cradle. What's a cradle? I don't know. So don't ask me. From the cradle to the grave, we are told lies about love. We're told all these lies about love, and then we take these lies about love and we say, I do with somebody. You know what those lies do? They wreck marriage. They wreck relationships because they're lies. And somebody, somewhere, sometime, ought to tell you a true love story. I'd like to do that today, actually. You'll never be able to build a strong, satisfying, fulfilling marriage till you understand what love is and get rid of the lies. So I want to tell you a love story. It's a true love story. It's a real love story. It's a love story, and yet it's a story of broken vows, a broken home, broken hearts, and broken lives, but a real, true love story nonetheless. It is, bar none, the greatest love story you'll ever read in the Bible, at least on the human level. It's the love story of a couple near the end of the Old Testament named Hosea and Gomer. It's their love story. Now, I just want to give you a couple heads up as we get into it. One is this. I'm not going to give you a definition of love, really, or 12 ways to love your spouse. I just want to tell you the story. Is that okay? Can I just tell you the story? And then I'd like you to absorb the story. Just let it land this week. And just let it sit there and see what God does with it. Because it'll teach you what love really is. It'll help you get rid of the lies and sort out the true from the false. The other thing I'd say about this story is it's tricky in this way. It'll get you because it's a picture. It's a picture of Hosea and Gomer and their marriage. But the more you let it absorb you and get into you, that picture, it'll become a mirror. And at some point you'll say, hey, that's me. And it'll catch you that way. And all of a sudden, you'll realize it's your story, and it's my story, and it's every person's story, not just Hosea and Gomer's story. But if you sit with the story all week, it'll change again. It'll move from a picture to a mirror to a window. And you can't read, think, listen to this story long before you realize it's also a window right into the heart of God. And I get to see part of the DNA of God as I look through this window right into God's heart through this love story, Hosea and Gomer. So let me just read a couple of verses in Hosea chapter 1. I'll take you 10 minutes to get there, and you take that 10 minutes, find it, and then I'll read it to you. It's right near the end. Those tiny little books called Minor Prophets, that's where Hosea lands. He's the first of them, first of the last 12 in the Old Testament. What I'd like to do is read you the first, I'll go 3 verses, and then we'll talk about this relationship, and then we'll come back and read a bit more further on. But it just starts by saying, the word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Beeri, during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the reign of Jeroboam, son of Jehoash, king of Israel, when the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go take to yourself an adulterous wife and children of unfaithfulness, because the land is guilty of the vilest adultery in departing from the Lord. So he married Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Don't let the first verse put you off. When you read about Jotham and Ahaz and Uzziah and Hezekiah, your brain naturally goes, oh, that was a long time ago and that was far away. That has nothing at all to do with me. But don't let that verse put you off, because when you read the book, you recognize the people that Hosea lived among and was teaching and preaching to, you realize that they were people that were believing all sorts of lies about love. They actually believed that love was something you could buy. They actually believed that love was the pursuit of self-gratification. These people believed that you could love inanimate objects. If they were living today, they would love cars, houses, stuff, things. But that was a lie, because love isn't something you can buy. And it's not about self-gratification. And it's not about inanimate objects. As you read this book, it has an alarmingly familiar ring to it the more you get into it. And so God realized they were believing the lie, and so he decided he would demonstrate to these people, and actually us who read it, hundreds, thousands of years later, he would demonstrate to them what real love was. And so he calls a young man named Hosea, probably not that old. He was a startup pastor, prophet, preacher, and he was single. And God said, Hosea, here's what I want you to do. This would have shocked him to his core, as much as it might shock us if God said the same thing. Hosea, I want you to go and marry a prostitute. Say what? Hosea, I want you to go and marry a prostitute. I want you to do it because I want the Israelites to know what it's like for me to be in covenant relationship with them. And to his eternal credit, he did what God said. And she came with a lot of baggage, with history, with a past, with skeletons in the closet. But they said vows, and they got married, and they set up home, house together. I imagine he said to himself, like some of us might say, well, her past wasn't very good. It's not great. But since God has brought us together, our future will be filled with happiness and delight. But boy, was he wrong. Wasn't that long before they had a boy. And God took the initiative by saying, Hosea, call him Jezreel. Now, Jezreel was the name of a city in Israel that had a terrible history. In fact, it played a tragic part in Israel's history. It was a scene of one of Jehu's great bloodbaths a long time before. But Hosea, call him Jezreel. Why? Because God was showing he hadn't for a moment forgotten the sin that had happened so long ago. And though these people didn't participate in it, why would God hold them accountable and say, I haven't forgot? Because these people hadn't renounced it either. And they just lived out the values that Jehu lived out so long ago. And after a while, there was another little baby born, a girl. And then a boy, and they were given significant names too. But here's the deal. There's a big question mark about child number two and child number three about who the father really was. You see, it's very clear in the text that Jezreel was Hosea and Gomer's, but it doesn't say that about child two and three. In fact, one of them is named, not my child. It's like God was saying to the Israelites, you're not mine, so name this child Hosea, not my child. Can you put yourself for a moment in Hosea's sandals? Do you know what it was like? Week after week, month after month, night after night, to see his expectant wife getting bigger and bigger, and him trying to figure out, is that my child or is that somebody else's? And then when she got pregnant again, are those kids mine or do they belong to somebody else? And the text doesn't say, except it leaves you with a big question mark about whether they were really Hosea's or not. It must have been torture to live in a relationship like that. Where's she going today? Did she just go for coffee? What's she doing when I'm at work? Who's she talking to? Who's she texting? Who's she, you know, all that stuff would have been in Hosea's head day after day after day. And when the bombshell hit, really, she walked. She left. He came home one day, and I don't know if there was a note on the table or what, but she was gone. She had cleared out. She was tired of being tied down to one man. She was tired of being a mom. And she just plain old left. And he suddenly finds himself a single dad with three little kids to bring up. So Hosea's free, right? Now he can get a divorce, right? Wrong. She ended the marriage for another man. And she's with another man. Shouldn't he be free? No. God says, no. You're not free, Hosea. Why? Because I'm going to show the Israelites that when I make vows, God said, when I enter covenant with people, I keep my promises. I keep my vows. I don't go back on them. He wouldn't give up on them, so Hosea, like God, wasn't to give up on his wife. But can you imagine what it must have been like for Hosea? Can you imagine? Here's his wife off with somebody else. And can you imagine the gossip that would have gone around town? Hosea's wife has left. It serves him right. He's up there. He's so busy telling everybody else how to do life and do marriage and do family. He couldn't keep his own home together. That would be all over the place, and he'd hear it. There would be other people, you know what they would say? Hosea, hey man, get on with life. She's gone. Start dating. Like, just get on the internet and find somebody, Hosea, for Pete's sake. It's time. And not only that, Gomer went from one man, and then apparently that wasn't good enough, so she went to somebody else. Then somebody else. Then somebody else. Till finally she's with a guy that can't even provide her with the necessities of life. And she's hitting rock bottom. Hosea, get on with your life. No, doesn't. He just figures he's going to be single all his life. Although his marriage may seem like a major stumbling block for his ministry, his family problems didn't disqualify him from serving God. In fact, they gave him a new understanding from God's point of view of the grossness of sin. It's like prostitution. God is saying through this story, you're like a prostitute when you walk away from me and start worshiping other gods. He saw that. And then he saw into the depth of God's heart the incredible love that God has for his people, even when they turn their back on him and go off with one lover after another. He never would have known that if he hadn't seen it played out in his own home. He knew how it hurt God when God was rejected. Usually people learn a great deal about God through the trials of life. But then, after a few years of this, the most astounding thing that you probably read in a long time happened to Hosea. The Lord said another thing to him. He had said to him, go marry a prostitute. But in chapter 3, verse 1, listen to what God says to him now. This is after she's left him for a man, and then another man, then another man, and then who knows what. The Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife again. Hello? Go show your love to your wife again, though she's loved by another and is an adulteress, lover, as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cake. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver. Then I told her, you're to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I'll live with you. For the Israelites will live many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or idol, after the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They'll come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last days. What would that done to you? God had said, go find her. Go love her again. Yeah, but I don't love her anymore. God is, you understand the history, the pain? Do you know what it's like, God, to be betrayed like that? I know, I want you to go and find her. I want you to show your love to her. How do I do that, God? It would be, in fact, an incredibly messy, messy search, a painful pursuit. All the old wounds would have to be reopened. And there was no guarantee that what had happened once would not happen again. When two broken people break each other and it gets messy, and they try and put it back together. It's messy, it's painful, it's gut-wrenching, it's hard. God does not just flick a switch and all of a sudden it's all good. It's a journey, it's a process, and God works in the reality, not in the ideal. What a gut-wrenching process. No easy, quick fixes. You know what he says to her when he finds her? You can come and live with me, but you're not to have sex with anybody else. And if you took the Hebrew apart, you'd hear him saying, and I'm not going to have sex with you either for many days. Come and live with me, and we'll figure out how to fix this broken thing. But you're not going to be intimate with anybody else or me till we figure this out. Listen, sex is the outcome of a good relationship, not the start. And when things are this badly broken, you figure out how to talk again. You figure out how to be friends again. You figure out how to live under the same roof again. You just don't jump into the sack and have sex. God knew that. Hosea knew that. Gomer was learning that. But where do you go to find somebody like Gomer? She'd hit rock bottom. Where do you go? Well, you'd have to go to the slave market because that's where she ended up. And it says he had to buy her. Buy her? Wait, she's his wife. She's already his. Buy her? What was that scene like? Hey, that's my wife. I want to take her home. Yeah, she might have been buddy, but she belongs to me. If you want her, you got to pay for her. You got to get in line like everybody else. We're going to auction her off shortly. Can you imagine the scene? She has to get up on the auction block. Probably has barely enough clothes to cover. And one guy says, I'll give you 10 shekels for her. And Hosea says, I'll give you 12. I'll give you 12. Guy says, okay, I'll make it 13. Hosea says, I'll give you 15. And the auctioneer says, sold. What would that have been like? What would have been like for Hosea to walk up to Gomer? I think her head would have hung. I abandoned him. I left our 3 children. And then I think, you know what I think Hosea did? Because he's so God-like. I think he goes right up to her and he puts his hand under her chin and he lifts her face up till their eyes meet and he says, Gomer, Gomer, called her name. Every other man that had said Gomer wanted to use her and abuse her. This man wanted to heal her. He said, Gomer. And it began to change everything. And he paid for what was already his. This is a picture of the gospel. In spite of our sin and our running away, our Hosea has come to find us. And he had to walk to the most despicable places and be around sinful, broken people to find us and to call us by name and to bring us back. And when God found you and me, we weren't nice people. We weren't all put together. You know who we were? We were slaves. Pastor Sean talked about that. We were slaves. We were broken. We had absolutely nothing to offer God except a history of rebellion and waywardness and running away. That's all we had. We were in rags. But he found us. And you know what he said? How much? How much for Dan Cochran? How much? You know what the answer was? The blood of your son for him. And he paid the price. Paid the price. And there was a point in my history where he lifted up my chin. Couldn't look at him. I knew my history. And he said, Dan. And I knew it was paid for. I knew it was done. And it changed everything. That's what real love looks like. That's what real love looks like. As a result, I found myself, like Gomer, forgiven, accepted, brought back, fully restored, new beginning, in covenant relationship with a God that says, no longer do I want you to call me master. I want to be your husband. I want you to experience the joy of living with me in my house, at my table. That's a love story. It's not a lie. 1 John, the little book at the end of the Old Testament, verse 11 says, dear friends, since God so loved us, since God was our Hosea, we also ought to be Hosea's to one another. We ought to love one another. I just submit to you at the very end here, the only way to really do marriage that lasts is to love like that. It's to lay down your life. It's to get beyond the fuzzy warm feelings and it's the about me stuff and say, I'll be Hosea to you. I'll be like Hosea to my husband. I'll be like Hosea to my wife. And is that's where it begins. You say, but you don't know the pain. You don't know the baggage. Read Hosea. You know what God says? He says, I get the pain. I've walked it. I get the heartbreak. I've been there. I know what it's like to be abandoned. I've been there too. But I also know that I'm the covenant-making, covenant-keeping God, and I will give you free of charge my Holy Spirit, who will live in you, and who will give you my love for your spouse. Yeah, it'll be a journey. It'll be messy and gut-wrenching, but together we can do it, because that's what love does, stays in there. And when it says I do, it means I do, and it's there for the long term. Let's stand together and pray. Father, thank you for your word. And I sometimes, Lord, we cringe when we read it. It's so other than what we experience. Sometimes, Lord, because we haven't lifted up our eyes and let you call us by name, all we can see is the other person's faults. I pray today that you would start your work in us by calling us by name, letting us know what you've saved us from. Lord, would you pour your love over us so that we might grab onto some of it and be able to love one another the way you've loved us, in Jesus' name, amen. You know what? We're gonna worship, but I need to say to you that this is a place of prayer up here at the front, and so often I feel God tugging at my heart throughout a service, and you might too, and I just want you to know today if in some way God has called your name, if some way you've said, you know what, I'm Gomer, I want you to know you're welcome back home, that you're welcome to come back. You're welcome to come back this morning. Just come on up here and stand or kneel. God gets that. He sees that. His heart will be filled with joy. You could meet him today. Maybe it's your marriage you need help with. Maybe it's something else. Just as a response to the Lord, come. And if you want someone to pray with you, we'll make sure there's people that pray with you. This is a good day. Day the Lord's made, and let's not leave without connecting personally with him.